Case number 12-1351, Ronald E. Byers, Appellant versus Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. Ronald E. Byers for Appellant. Teresa McLaughlin for Appellant. Mr. Byers, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, sir. May it please the court. My name is Ronald E. Byers. I'm the appellant in this case. Reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case is about a taxpayer's right to receive tax collection due process from the Internal Revenue Service. I plan on discussing how this court has appellate venue to hear this case, how the IRS Office of Appeals and U.S. Tax Court Senior Judge Swift abused their discretion, and if needed, how the Office of U.S. Tax Court Senior Judge is unconstitutional under the Appointments Clause. After the court has heard from the parties, I would request that the court reverse the tax court's decision and give it instruction to grant Ronald E. Byers summary judgment and enter a new decision accordingly. On the venue issue, this court has venue to hear this because collection due process cases are not mentioned in any of the six subparagraphs of IRC Section 7482.1, B1A through F. The commissioner admits that collection due process cases are not expressly mentioned in the appellate venue statute. In fact, the appellate venue statute also does not mention expressly Internal Revenue Code 6320, which deals with liens, IRC Section 6330, which deals with levies. Nowhere in there does it talk about federal tax collection at all. Those omissions from the statute also mean that collection due process cases cannot be implicitly mentioned there, because the flush language of IRC 7482B1 provides that if for any reason the type of tax case, tax court case is not mentioned in subparagraphs A through F, that review and decision may lie in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. If for any reason is strong, unambiguous language. The Congress anticipated that not every U.S. tax court case could fall under the appointments venue statute. This is a case that is it's not a redetermination of taxes. This is a challenge to a liability that was assessed by the appeals officer They agree that I can challenge the tax liability and only if I satisfy certain statutory conditions. Taxpayer's liability did not involve any prior administration or judicial proceedings that I meaningfully anticipated or participated in. Second, I must not have been precluded from raising liability. And third, must not have received a notice of determination or other opportunity to dispute the liability. If the taxpayer met certain conditions, he may challenge his liability in tax court but only if he first raised the liability challenge in the Office of Appeals. If he didn't, he's out of luck, basically, and there would be no ability for him to have it reviewed. The commissioner's venue argument, if this case was so simple, this court would have long ago, in the venue argument, would have long ago transferred this to the Eighth Circuit if they didn't think that it belonged here. Therefore, this court must deny the commissioner's motion to transfer venue.
This court has jurisdiction, has venue under the catch-all provision, but is that venue exclusive?
It's not exclusive, it's primary. The commissioner can stipulate with the parties to have it transferred to another circuit, but I don't believe it's exclusive, it's primary. So that's all I've got to say on that. Do you have any more questions about venue?
I don't have any questions about venue, but I'm just curious, Mr. Byers, what's your basis for challenging the underlying tax liability?
There were assessments that were made that were not in the original Byers 1 decision from the tax court, and there was also a 2003 attempt to collect. There was no notice
of... I mean the underlying tax liability. I didn't mean the collection. I meant the... I'm just curious about your basis for arguing that the basis for challenging the tax court's determination that you owe the money, that you owe the back taxes.
In the determination, they attempted to add additions to tax for penalties that were never assessed in the original trial. Okay. And they also attempted to collect for 2003, and there was no NOD ever issued for 2003.
So you're seeking a redetermination?
I am not seeking a redetermination. I am here challenging the liabilities. But I'm asking for summary judgment and a reversal of the tax court's decision.
Of liability?
Of the granting of the commissioner that we're here on a summary judgment case. And he granted summary judgment to the Commissioner of Revenue, and it was an abuse of his discretion to do so.
You're opposing liability.
I am opposing liability, yes.
Isn't that a redetermination of the
position of liability? Not. I am challenging. I have the right to challenge.
It's not a question of whether you have a right to challenge. It's a question of where. So no one's disputing you have a right to challenge. We're talking about the problem.
Right, and this is the proper venue, though.
Is this a redetermination of the prior
this is
redetermination
not a
against you?
This is not a redetermination, no. But the time for redetermination has passed. You do not have the ability to ask for a redetermination after the assessment is assessed and the determination has been made. All you can do is challenge the liability after that.
Is there any reason why you care which court of appeals hears it?
I believe this court hears agency cases, more so than other circuits, and I believe this would be a better. I see my time has got here.
Okay. Do you want to save your rebuttal time?
Yes, I would.
Okay, fine. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Teresa McLaughlin, and with me is Marian Erickson, and we represent the commissioner. The commissioner is still asking this court to transfer this case to the Eighth Circuit, and our position is that the applicable venue provision is not the catch-all flush language of Section 7482B, but subsection B1A, which applies to cases involving the redetermination of tax liability. In a collection due process case, the merits of the underlying tax liability are always potentially at issue. It's just that there's a statutory...
But they're not in this case. Right?
Well, there was one aspect...
I mean, it can't be in this case.
One aspect
could... Is it true that it can't be in this case? This is only about collection.
Well, one issue was eligible. The failure to pay penalty imposed by Section 6651A3 had not been the subject of the prior tax court proceeding that was affirmed by the Eighth Circuit. But the taxpayer just waived that issue by not raising it before appeals.
So then it's not properly before us?
Well,
right?
No, not at this stage,
well,
but...
That's the question. Right?
Okay. So in a CDP case, the underlying liability is always potentially is at issue. It's just that there's a rule of preclusion. It's a statutory rule of preclusion that goes, but the same would be true at common law if you litigated your liability
before. But is there any way, doesn't the rule of preclusion bar the court from getting to it?
Pardon?
Doesn't the rule of the preclusion bars the court from getting to it? Does it? Underlying liability cannot be an issue, right? He's precluded from raising it.
So he's precluded, and if it weren't for the statute, it would be precluded by common law because he already litigated it.
But all of
these cases do potentially involve that, and it can sometimes be contested whether the taxpayer really can litigate.
Can it be contested in this case?
Well, we don't think so, but...
Okay, well, then doesn't that answer the question? And this is not a case involving redetermination. You just said that it can't.
Well, there's also another sense of redetermination of liability.
Mm-hmm.
There's the sense of obligation or responsibility. Is the tax owed? And
but
liability has another.
You can't raise that, right?
But
wait,
liability has
answer,
another
please,
sense.
Please answer that question.
Liability has another.
He can't raise that, can he?
No.
Okay.
But liability has another meaning, which means subjecting or attaching property, subjecting property to the payment of tax. So we think that this situation is similar to another situation that falls within Section 7482B1A, and that is transferee liability.
Mm-hmm.
Because the taxpayer's transferee can potentially litigate whether the taxpayer was liable for the tax. But again, preclusion applies. It's not statutory preclusion, but it's common law preclusion. So, for instance, if the transferee is the taxpayer's successor, and the taxpayer had litigated his liability, then the successor would be bound. And those transferee liability cases also are about the other aspect of liability, which is the subjection of property to the payment of tax. It's just that in those cases, the question is whether the transfer was made from the taxpayer to the transferee in actual or constructive fraud of creditors. Here, the liability determination in the sense of subjecting property to payment is different because it just looks at whether levy is appropriate or whether there is another alternative to
right,
levy.
But it has nothing to do with redetermination, does it?
Well, there's even in a collection case.
I realize you say in your brief that I'm just quibbling with semantics, but that's what we do here. That's our job.
Right? Well, of course it is, Your Honor. But even in a CDP case involving just is levy appropriate, the IRS Office of Appeals issues a notice of determination, and the tax court reviews that determination. So also, this question makes a difference in this case because under the tax court's Golson rule, it has its own decisions, and if a court of appeals has reversed the decision, it is bound to follow that. And the tax court does not apply the record rule in CDP cases involving collection determinations, like this case. But the Eighth Circuit has decided that the record rule does apply. And so at the beginning of this case, or in the beginning of the opinion, the tax court determined that venue for an appeal lay in the Eighth Circuit, and he accordingly applied the record rule. So it does make a difference. And it needs to be determinable at the outset of a case what circuit it's going to go to, because, you know, the circuits have different law, both on the merits and procedure. So that's why we think that a rule treating a collection due process appeal as belonging here, if only collection determination is at issue.
Okay. But I understand in the regional, that's a good policy reason for wanting it in the Eighth Circuit. But if you were writing our opinion, what would you say about the language of the statute in the case of a redetermination of tax liability?
Okay, well,
what
I would
we say about that?
I would say that the amicus suggests that the case of transferee liability, that the words redetermination of tax liability were drafted broadly so as to include transferee liability cases. Those cases, too, always involve the potential for contesting the taxpayer's underlying tax liability, and those cases also involve the question of subjecting the taxpayer's property to attachment. So I would stress that liability has two senses, one being is the tax owed at all on the merits, and the other being that is this property to be subjected to collection. So I just wanted to say a word or two about the collection due process determination. In this case, the appeals officer gave the taxpayer an opportunity to demonstrate that there was an alternative to levy, but she said we would need you to get in compliance because you haven't filed some recent returns, and we would need financial information to determine, you know, whether you can afford to pay the tax now or should be allowed to pay it in installments. And the taxpayer wrote a letter that wasn't responsive to these concerns, and he never divulged his financial information. And so after 5 months went by, the appeals officer really had no alternative but to allow the collection of tax to go forward by levy. So unless
your argument, if we disagree with you on redetermination, your argument would be that D.C. is not the exclusive place of that year. It can be D.C.
We think it can be D.C., but only where the commissioner stipulates to venue in this.
No, I understand. Yeah. I'm saying, assume you don't agree with you on that point, that we read the statute. I just want to make sure I understand. The language of the statute says, if I've got it right, may be reviewed in the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. You would argue the petitioner would have that choice, but it's not required that it be here.
We think that it's...
If
that
you're saying you're wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I understand.
If you think we're wrong, then it can be decided here. But if we are...
It would not be unlawful in your reading of the statute for it to be in the Eighth Circuit, too. Is that right?
But
if you're wrong.
If we're wrong, I actually think it would just belong here.
Why?
Because
reviewed in the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, what is that?
But I think the flush language applies only if one of the six subsection doesn't apply. And the may, I think, is leaving room for the stipulation to venue. But we haven't stipulated to venue in this circuit.
That's interesting. Okay.
unless there are any other questions.
Thank you. Mr. Beyer, I think you saved your rebuttal time, so
yes.
Feel free.
Just to bring up a couple quick points. The commissioner is making claims that I was not in compliance and hadn't filed, but the appeals officer was in possession of the administrative record, and if you look at the appendix for the appellate at page 66, this would be the transmittal letter that was sent along with the CDP file to the appeals officer. And in there's a very simple line there that says the taxpayer is in compliance with filing requirements. Now, the appeals officer was in possession of that information. For her to make the determination that I was not in compliance then, or to make that statement when she had the information before her, was an abuse of her discretion. When she engaged in numerous ex parte communications, which is there were unlawful disclosures. I mean, we're talking about crimes here. And this is where this court has to stop this sort of abuse of taxpayers. We can't allow the IRS Office of Appeals to think that there's no consequences for their actions. But she was clearly in possession of information that said I was in compliance. She terminated the hearing without ever getting back to me once. I had a correspondence hearing. I had one time, all I was allowed was one time. She was silent for 5 months. There was, she told me when I had discussed the 2003 year, the lack of an NOD, she told me that she would get back to me with further and clarifying evidence. I expressly said that if she was inclined to uphold the determination, that I, would reserve the right to at least supplement the record or give her further clarifying evidence if she was so inclined. But after 5 months, and then there was a bunch of ex parte communications that went on with her, between her and my then adversary, the Office of Chief Counsel in St. Paul, who was litigating a case against me in a case, she did not follow revenue procedures. She did not attempt to get the information she needed from the office that was collecting the tax. She engaged in numerous ex parte communications. Probably, I think there's 25 of them known, and there's several mentions in there. There's several things still missing from the record. We still don't know the extent of the unlawful ex parte communications that took place between her and other IRS employees.
Mr. Byers, you're well over your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case is submitted.